I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to Extra Shot, our weekly pod spilling the funniest stories in sport this week. My name is Jack Rivlin. I'm joined as ever by Zach.
Hello.
Hello, mate. This week on the pod, we're talking Heung-min Son's hotel scrap. Messi sparks a diplomatic incident, and there is a love triangle in the FA Cup. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, no, I'm not too bad.
Enjoyed the fairy tale wins in international football this weekend?
I did, yeah. I mean, I enjoyed the Ivory Coast one. Qatar seems like a little bit less of a fairy tale, I feel like. I was pretty surprised to see they've won back-to-back Asian Cups.
Yeah.
When, I mean, my memory of them from the World Cup was they were pretty shit.
They were shy. Actually, the guy who scored a hat-trick of penalties in the final wasn't in the World Cup, I think.
Oh, okay. So do you think that's the turnaround?
He celebrated his first goal by doing a magic trick with cards.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
So maybe he missed a bit of his sorcery in the World Cup.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is weird. And they were hosts as well.
What's his next trick?
Yeah, for my next trick, I will secure the hosting rights to Euro 2032. Something like that. Also, how does South Korea never win it? They're pretty good.
I was thinking, we looked this up and they haven't won it since 1960, which I thought they should clean up, really.
Yeah, well, they got to the semi-finals this time and they lost a shock defeat to Jordan. And that is perhaps because of an incident in the hotel the night before involving Heung-min Son. So apparently he's the captain, obviously, and all the Korean squad in the hotel were eating dinner the night before. And apparently Son views this as like an important part of the team bonding that they all eat together. But some of the younger players wanted to get down so they could go and play ping pong. It's a real younger player move.
You're not leaving the table till you finish your greens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Son's the stern parent. Yeah. So it actually did pan out a bit like that because apparently led by PSG star Lee Kang-in, the younger players like stormed off, refused to sit at the table. And then when Son had a go at them, there was this like massive war of words. They were all abusing him and a fight broke out and Son dislocated his fingers.
Dislocated his finger?
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean,
that's a pretty rough fight if you're dislocating your fingers, surely.
Yeah, the official line from the Korean camp is that he was breaking up the fight. But given that he was the one getting abused, I don't know. He doesn't strike me as
dragging people apart.
Yeah, I think, and you can see how that would hurt your fingers. And his fingers were strapped in the game against Jordan, which they lost. I mean, I can't really imagine him engaged in a fight.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you try and leave the dinner table.
He's quite a surprising guy. Like sometimes he'll cry.
Yeah, I mean he has this image as being really like humble. I was chatting to a friend of mine's from South Korea, and she said that a friend of hers went to an arts university, and a girl who was there was dating Son. And yeah, we think of him as like the most humble player in the Premier League. And she was saying that he like turned up to this event in his like Bugatti and stepped out in like designer clothes and sunglasses and just like swanned in as like, because he is like the biggest celebrity. He endorses everything. But it's just quite funny, this contrast between the image that we have of him.
Yeah. And I think I can kind of see the South Korean thing in a bit more light now, that like they're quite a highly strung football nation, a bit like England. There's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
So I can sort of see how that all panned out. But yeah, nice entertaining start to the week. Did you have a good pancake day, speaking of this
good
week?
I did have a good pancake day.
Have any nice new
recipes? I had pancakes at lunch and dinner.
Didn't you have... You had Korean style.
I had Korean style.
In honour of Son's fingers.
Yeah, very nice Korean pancakes. with kimchi and some soy sauce on them.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was very nice. I've actually got a good Pancake Day related story for you. So if you've seen recently, there's this Twitter thread going around about all of the things that Liverpool fans have claimed to have invented. We'll link to it in the show notes. But Curtis Jones sort of jumped on that bandwagon this week when he accused Mikel Arteta of copying Jurgen Klopp's habit of celebrating with the fans at the end of matches and pumping his fist. So Curtis claims that this is Jurgen's thing.
For many years, you know, we've always been a team that, you know, our fans have spoken about, and the gaffer himself, you know, the way he fist pumps the fans and stuff. That's kind of like our thing. So if they want to be stealing our stuff, then it shows that we're on the right path and that we've got these copying us.
God, they just like self-mythologise so much that they invented, is it fist bumps or fist pumps?
Fist pumps is, you know the way Jurgen Klopp goes at the end of the matches and like pumps to the crowd. Like, he's not invented that. Come
that's
on.
That's where everyone celebrates.
Yeah. But anyway, I can't quite believe that I'm saying this, but the Liverpool Echo, the local newspaper in Liverpool, is now claiming that Scousers invented the name Pancake Day.
Did you know, right, that Scousers are the only people that call Pancake Day Pancake Day? The official name for the day is Shrove Tuesday, but us Scousers only call it Pancake Day or Pancake Tuesday.
Everyone I know calls it Pancake Day.
I've never heard anyone call it Shrove Tuesday.
Maybe my granny on the way to church.
You're enjoying Ash Wednesday.
Wishing them all a very happy Maundy Thursday up in Liverpool.
I'm counting down the days. Ascension Sunday is coming up, I think.
Did you know the Scousers are the only ones who call it Christmas Day? Everyone else calls it the Feast of Michaelmas. I think that is technically not the name, if you know the Christian calendar.
Yeah.
Do they actually think that?
I don't know. I saw this and I first thought it was a piss take, but there is actually an article on the Liverpool Echo website claiming that again.
If it is a troll, it's actually a really good one.
Yeah. So it's been quite a meteoric rise for Luke Littler. So 6 months ago, he was locked in his gaming dungeon, spending his £10 pocket money on FIFA Ultimate Team. And these days he's shooting 9 darters with Christian Eriksen and basking in free kebabs for life. So Luke won his first Players Championship tournament this week, I think. And you know, he just seems to be popping up everywhere at the moment. So he was invited along to Old Trafford a few weeks ago to meet Sir Alex Ferguson. And Luke's a big United fan, so you think that's a big honour for him. Unfortunately, Fergie's quest to impart a few pearls of wisdom to Luke didn't quite go to plan.
Chatting to Sir Alex as well, what a dream. It was crazy to meet him. Obviously, my dad and my manager, they've witnessed all of his glory years, the 99. I didn't really get much out of him because of his accent, but I did hear him stick to it and stick at it.
Because of his accent.
I love this image of Fergie trying desperately to regale Luke with stories about Cristiano Ronaldo's unmatchable mentality and Luke just blankly nodding and smiling.
Also, the way he says because of his accent, it's like, is sort of like Fergie's like unwell, and we all like, obviously because of the state he's in, like we all should know.
Yeah,
his accent's not that thick.
Yeah, you're being introduced to like a senile relative.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, to be fair, Luke was born in 2007, so he must have been 6 when Fergie retired.
Oh, so he's got no like personal experience of United being good, really. He doesn't remember Fergie's like last 6 years.
It's
anyway.
Been a little bit like when you know when your mum spots some old actor on TV and it's sort of like, oh, he was so good looking when he was a boy.
Yeah, sort of how I feel about like hearing about like Don Revy or something. I'm like, I get that he was obviously really good, and I have now read up on it.
Yeah, one man who had a little more luck picking Fergie's brains is Stuart Pearce. So Stuart was telling the story that a few years ago he was in a fantasy football tournament at his son's school, and it came to like the final week of the season, and his son, who's 8-year-old son, so aka him, was neck and neck with the school headmaster in the league, and he's looking for any way to get the marginal gains in to win this league, and he calls up Sir Alex Ferguson under the guise of being England under 21 manager and asks him he's like, oh, it's just wondering, Fergie, who are you going to be playing this weekend, Phil Jones or Chris Smalling? It's just, you know, I'm thinking of coming down to watch the game. And Fergie is obviously, you know, he thinks he's just coming on a scouting mission. So he tells him, you know, like Chris Smalling's going to be starting. So Stewart then transfers him into the team. United get a clean sheet and he wins the Fantasy Football League by a point.
Against the headmaster.
Against the headmaster.
Presumably the headmaster only found out when Piers revealed this in an interview.
Yeah, I guess so.
There was a thing about like loads of players were giving away their team selections in fantasy football, weren't they? Because like a lot of players obviously play it, Premier League players, and they would drop a teammate or something.
Oh, because they knew that
they weren't
going to play it the weekend.
I've seen the fantasy football nerds sometimes saying like, oh, this is evidence that someone's going to be out with injury and stuff.
Mm.
That's pretty funny to Stuart Pearce. I sometimes find him a bit unsmiling, but...
Yeah.
Just a bit scared of him.
Yeah.
He's got some good tales. We'll do an episode on him.
Yeah, no, he's a good character.
Yeah. Right, last week we told you how Leo Messi's no-show in Hong Kong had sparked outrage among the locals. They were demanding refunds when he didn't play any minutes in Inter Miami's friendly in Hong Kong. And they were kicking his head off cardboard cutouts at one point. It got quite vicious. Anyway, now it's escalated into a full-blown diplomatic incident. So a couple of days after the match, Hong Kong politician Regina Ip waded in and she said, Messi should never be allowed to return to Hong Kong. His lies and hypocrisy are disgusting. So, you know, pretty strong stuff.
I just don't get, like, he was injured. Surely, please, like, give the guy a break.
Well, he was injured, Zach, but he then had the audacity to play 30 minutes of Inter Miami's next friendly, which was in, of all places, Japan, China's hated rivals. And this obviously went down like a bucket of cold sick in China. And it went to quite a high level of government, quite a long way above Regina Ip's head. In fact, the ruling Communist Party have now cancelled Argentina's tour of China. So Argentina and Messi were due to play some friendlies in the country against, I think, Nigeria and Ivory Coast. And they've now said they're not happening in retaliation for Messi's disrespect of being injured. Yeah, I just have this image of Xi Jinping in the war room in Zhongnanhai, and he's like having a busy day crushing Taiwanese dissent and shipping artillery shells to Putin, and suddenly an aide bursts in and it's like, Comrade Xi, there is an urgent matter of national importance. And the room falls silent, and he's like, Leo Messi has just been spotted making a cameo against Vissel Kobe. 30-minute cameo. And I'm imagining the whole room's in silence as this, you know, great political mind ponders his next move, and he considers a full-scale invasion of Patagonia or adding import tariffs to picanha steaks. And eventually he just says, cancel the friendly tour.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite a measured response for Xi Jinping.
True, although for anyone else...
Could have thrown the entire Argentina squad in a forced labour camp in there.
But also, as you just said, what part of him being injured do they not understand?
Yeah, yeah.
So what's he supposed to do?
Yeah, it does. I don't know. It's really just seeing sport as this like business spectacle, isn't it?
Yeah. And also just thinking that the whole world has to behave like one of your citizens. I mean, I doubt Messi really gives a shit. He's bigger than governments, isn't he?
So they think that this was a sort of planned slight on the Chinese nation, that, you know, they didn't want to endorse the government by pandering to them and playing Messi. Is that the whole...
And apparently the new Argentine prime minister, you know, the guy who everyone says looks like a sort of like Welsh policeman from the 70s, he's really anti-China, so they think it's part of some conspiracy. And I think Messi doesn't really give a shit, but one person who is really sweating is David Beckham, who obviously owns Inter Miami. And Bex takes his sort of like global popularity quite seriously, his brand. Anyway, I think to try and smooth things over, he released a Chinese New Year message on Weibo, because it was Chinese New Year on Saturday. Happy New Year to all our Chinese listeners. Here's the messages. It's quite enjoyable.
Xin Shuen Kuai Le, Chao Bei Ge Da Jia, Ba Nian Le.
Anyway, that's David Beckham basically saying Happy Chinese New Year from Inter Miami Stadium, hoping it's going to smooth over the incident, but it just made it worse. So then he got loads of abuse under his message. from Chinese fans. I say fans, possibly.
Yeah, they already booed him off at in Hong Kong, didn't they?
So Beckham's personal brand is at stake. And apparently Chinese fans are now abusing the Argentine embassy on social media. And their main line of attack is they're all just telling them that the Falkland Islands are British because they know how much that will piss them off.
Fair enough, they've done their research.
Yeah, which, again, though, just one more time, what part of him being injured do they not understand? Like, what do they want?
Like, we've been talking about this for, like, 2 weeks now.
I really hope it just keeps going.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be a sort of Argentine task force in the South China Sea.
Yeah, I mean, if China's pretty powerful in the global economy. They could probably, I mean, Argentina's struggling enough as it is. If they shut down imports, then
do you think this story ends with Messi like kowtowing to the general secretary and like having to do an apology?
Yeah, maybe we'll go and file past Chairman Mao's mausoleum.
Yeah, looking very grave and apologetic. I think it honestly could go that way, but equally, if I'm Messi, I'd just be like, I don't care.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
At the time of recording, not only is it Ash Wednesday, but it's also Valentine's Day. And Jack, I know you're probably going to spend this evening scouring a BP forecourt for a miserable bunch of wilting roses. But while you do that, there will be a fairy tale unfolding in women's football. So Irish stars Katie McCabe and Ruesha Littlejohn were a couple for 7 years, but they split up just before last summer's World Cup. So it was the first World Cup that Ireland women's team had ever qualified for. Shortly after their breakup, rumours began to swirl that Katie was now dating her Australian Arsenal teammate, Caitlin Ford. So Ford had posted pictures of the pair of them on holiday together, looking pretty loved up. So obviously this was, you know, a bit of an issue for the Irish team coming into the World Cup. And then in delicious drama, Ireland were drawn against Australia for the opening game of the World Cup. So this was obviously Katie and her ex playing for Ireland against her new girlfriend. And boy, did it live up to the billing. So Littlejohn refused to shake Caitlin Ford's hand as the teams lined up. She did a bit of a John Terry
and Wayne Bridge. Did she shake her ex's hand?
Well, they were playing on the same team,
ignored each other. didn't pass to her.
Yeah. So that was in the pre-match lineup, and then at full time, she squared up to her love rival, and her teammates had to drag her away. So
amazing.
Yeah. So this must have been very awkward in the Ireland camp for the whole tournament, I imagine. But since then, Katie McCabe and Caitlin Ford, the two Arsenal teammates, have made their relationship official. And on this most romantic of days, there is a new twist. So tonight, Ford and McCabe will line up for Arsenal in an FA Cup Valentine's Day clash against Russia Little John's London City Lionesses.
Excellent. Is Battle of the X's.
The Battle of the X's, yeah. So obviously this is... We're recording this on Wednesday, so we don't actually know if there'll be any more juicy drama. But if there is, then I'm sure you'll be able to read about it in our Friday email.
Hey, we'll put it in the newsletter, yeah.
Yeah, we'll put it in the newsletter, and which you can sign up for at upshot.email. And maybe we'll give you a little update next week as well on the pod.
God, I'm really hoping there's...
I know, I hope there's a...
Whose side are you on? I feel a bit sorry for Russia Little John.
I'm pretty sorry for her.
She's been jilted. And was there some overlap in their relationships?
Who knows? I'd love to have been a fly on the wall for the Ireland camp.
It's quite like that snooker Battle of the X's. Do you remember there was that couple who were married? Mark Evans and Rhiann. I'm sorry, Mark Allen and Rhiann Evans. And they were married. They've got a kid together, but they didn't even speak. And she got added to the men's... to a men's tournament, and he gave some like really sniffy interview where he was like, well, I don't see what the women's players are going to add to this, obviously meaning my hated ex-wife. And like there was another time where she
was on punditry duty for this match, and he was warming up on the table, and the punditry box was in view of the table, and he demanded that she was kicked out of the pundit studio.
And then they got drawn against each other.
Yeah, they got drawn against
and
each other.
Didn't one of them refuse to fist bump the other? And then she nearly won. She lost. He's like a pretty top player.
Yeah.
But that's good. Bit of simmering hatred. That's what we want.
That's great.
But to have it on Valentine's Day, that's really something.
Yeah.
Or as you call it in Liverpool, Valentine's Day.
Actually, while we're on the subject of Valentine's Day, my favourite Valentine's Day story is... Do you remember a few years ago, Blaise Matuidi posted a sort of very cookie cutter Valentine's Day tweet to his other half, along with a screenshot of a picture of the two of them, which was unfortunately slightly spoiled by the fact that he'd failed to hide his Google search for Matuidi wife in the screenshot. It literally had Matuidi femme in the Google search bar, Matuidi wife in French. You know, it's like he could have at least typed out her name.
Yeah, whatever your name is.
Yeah.
That was an absolute classic. That makes those $2.99 four-court roses look like quite a touching gesture, actually.
Yeah.
If my wife is listening. When it comes to cooking, we've all got our personal twists on traditional dishes. Cream in the scrambled eggs, an extra glug of brandy in the Dundee cake. Or, if you're the grandfather of 15-year-old Russian skater Kamila Valieva, you sprinkle 2.1 nanograms of trimetazine into your pavlova mix. So you might remember Kamila Valieva during the Winter Olympics. She was that 15-year-old skater who failed a drugs test. Which was like...
Everyone was very much on her side at that point, right?
Well, it's like, at 15, how responsible can you really be? She's now 17 and is denying that she had any intention to dope. Her defense is that she swallowed this banned drug after her granddad made a strawberry pudding with the same knife that he'd used to crush up his heart medication pills. Which is...
That's a new one.
It's pretty creative. I mean, I'm not sure why her dedushka was racking up lines of his angina meds. Like, why was he crushing them?
Yeah, I guess surely you have that with your orange squash in the morning.
Yeah, you're not meant to snort them. I guess maybe it's to make them easier to swallow, because she did also say that it could have been that she shared a water glass with him and he sort of like had the residue on his lips.
How accurate are these drug tests? Because people always seem to come out with these excuses of... really obscure ways that they might have come into contact with them.
Yeah, I mean, she also had two legal heart medications in her system. So I don't believe her personally. I think if a 15-year-old is taking heart medications, then it's not a stretch that they took an illegal one. But yeah, I mean, we have a regular award for creative excuses, which I like to call the I slipped, fell, and landed arse first on the ketchup bottle award for excuses. A couple of other good examples. So jockey Oisin Murphy, he claimed that he'd somehow absorbed cocaine from a woman he slept with. He got his sentence cut in half by saying that. They bought it, the horse racing authorities. I mean, horse racing is rife with coke, so...
Yeah. So how is he saying that they came into contact? Was it through kissing, or was it... sprinkled on other areas?
I think you can take it that way, can't you?
Oh, what?
Well, I mean, you could
shaft it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe up the bum as well with a straw. I don't know what sexual activity he's claiming to have partaken in. Or yeah, he probably...
I've heard. You seem quite clued up on these.
I've got this friend. I have heard. But or it could have been kissing, more likely, yeah. He said sexual contact, though, so who knows. And then Tyson Fury said he'd ingested nandrolone by eating boar's testicles, which for me was sort of mainly a sort of macho flex thing. That's very, it's like his dad claims to like have spent Christmas Day alone in the woods eating rabbit stew, which is, yeah. So I think there was a macho thing going on there. But actually there's a 1500 meter runner called Shelby Houlihan in America who also said she got nandrolone from pork. She said, I'd eaten a pork burrito from a quote, authentic Mexican food truck. I love the way she describes that. It's like TripAdvisor review, 5 stars, lovely little place, but it did cost me my entire career.
Yeah. Is nandrolone a naturally occurring thing? Is it a bit
but I think you've got to eat
the stuff that's in Red Bull.
Taurine,
yeah.
Yeah, I think that's legal though, isn't it? But nandrolone, I think, yeah, you can get it from eating a lot of
boar testicles.
Yeah, but like a lot. Anyway, they didn't buy Shelby's excuse. She got banned for 4 years and she now competes in beer miles, which is where you do laps of a 400 meter track and you have to neck a beer on every lap. Sounds bleak.
Do they mind that there?
I think they turn a blind eye to nandrolone intake. Yeah, they should watch her.
Didn't she set the world record for that as well?
What, the BMI world record? I didn't know that.
She was probably on the 0.0% coronas from that same Mexican food truck.
She just can't be trusted. Well, actually, I can think of a good new opportunity for her, which is the Enhanced Games is coming.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Yeah, so the Enhanced Games is the brainchild of some very sinister Silicon Valley billionaires. And it's literally the Olympics, but with no drug testing. And they are planning a mini event, I think, this year. And they're offering a $1.5 million prize to anyone who can break the world record in one of the swimming events. Not sure which one. And Aussie swimmer James Magnussen, who I think was like a reasonable competitor, he's thrown his hat in the ring. He said, I'm going to juice to the gills and I'll break it within 6 months. Which, do you think he will?
I don't know. I guess so. He must be pretty good already if he thinks he can.
He can wear the banned swimsuit as well, which will probably help.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that this Games will result in someone breaking like Usain Bolt's world record? 100 meters.
That would be great, because I mean that's always been the argument with doping in the Olympics. It's just like, why not just let them do it? It's sort of like an Olympics for pharmacists, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. The real medal should go to the doping agents.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit more like F1. sort of streamline their bodies.
Yeah, but I think you can now see
horrible experimental drugs.
Yeah, it could get quite Dr. Frankenstein. Yeah, I'm actually all for it. Let the mutants run. Let's see a 7 second 100 meters.
Yeah.
Do you think Russia are going to be really fucking good in it? Camilla Valieva's granddad suddenly like coaching.
The first one to do a quadruple pirouette.
Yeah, and all they ate was this pavlova beforehand. There was some quite good criticism from an Australian journalist. She said, this is the grotesque Games. You'll have condoms full of walnuts walking around saying, I am the best. So I think that condom full of walnuts is a description of like a really muscle bound. And she said, it'll be the roid rage Games. I mean, like, I get the safety argument, but is that different to boxing or UFC or even like rugby at this stage?
For steroids, what do you mean?
I just mean like we tolerate all kinds of entertainment that's really bad for the health of the performers.
Yeah, I guess.
So why not just pump them full of roids?
Yeah, I mean, if that's a risk that the athletes are willing to take, then yeah, it's the same. It's the same with boxing. Like you see that they've all got dementia and
gone down a serious route for us. We do have a serious side. Although I am looking forward to watching the Enhanced Games, and thank you to Peter Thiel, the shady billionaire, for backing it.
Yeah, thank you.
That is the last time we'll be thanking Peter Thiel on this podcast.
So it was a pretty quiet transfer window this time around. I always have a lot of sympathy for players that when the sort of deadline day comes around, they've got to up sticks and move across the country or across the world at the whim of some shady chairman. And that's before we even think about the family. So we did a story a couple of weeks ago about Riyad Mahrez there was that clip of him breaking it to his wife that they'd been moving to Saudi, and she sort of burst into tears and he just responds saying, it's part of the game, isn't it?
I saw someone comment on the video of him saying that, saying it looks like that was one of the 10 sentences he said that day.
Yeah.
Also, did you see the interview with her? Now she's moved to Saudi and she's like, I was really worried about it. And then I arrived and I saw they've got Nando's, so it's actually all right.
She's settling in. You're
sort of clutching at straws, really. Yeah. If that's... but anyway, another player fell foul of the roulette wheel of deadline day this time around, and that was American forward Duncan Maguire, who to me sounds a little bit like the calamitous American cousin of Harry Maguire, who'd come and stay for the summer and get into some sort of calamitous japes.
Yeah. In Mykonos, or
maybe in Mykonos, or I'm just imagining him sort of in his mum's attic, just in the sort of bedroom upstairs.
Cousin Duncan's
here. Anyway, Duncan plays for the Orlando Pirates, and they were at the end of January away on a warm weather training camp in Mexico when a deadline day bid came in from championship side Blackburn Rovers. And you know, I like to imagine that this was a bit of a dream come true for Duncan, and that growing up he'd plastered the walls of his bedroom in Omaha, Nebraska with pictures of Morten Gamst Pedersen, and he'd spent his weekends doing paint by numbers of Blackburn Cathedral. But unfortunately for Duncan, his dreams were about to be crushed, because after boarding his flight to Lancashire and finally logging onto the crappy BA Wi-Fi, he discovered that his transfer had fallen through. So it turned out that the bumbling admin staff at Blackburn had accidentally pressed save instead of submit on the online paperwork for his move. So the move didn't go through. So no sooner had he landed in the UK than he was boarding the first flight back to Orlando. And
well, the dream was over.
The dream was over, yeah.
So he has not moved.
He hasn't moved. He didn't have time to check out the giant Asda in Blackburn before he had to get his plane back.
Never tasted a Lancashire hot pot.
Exactly. Yeah.
Never will.
Tragic, tragic. But it reminded me of another story, because it's not the first time that Blackburn Rovers' hapless admin team have cost their club a star signing. So back in 1993, Blackburn manager Kelly Dalglish was over the moon. He'd shaken hands with Nottingham Forest youngster Roy Keane on a club record transfer to Blackburn. He then called up the Blackburn office to get them to fax through a contract. But, you know, it was a sunny Friday afternoon in the middle of the summer, and everybody had clocked off early to go to the pub. So he sort of made his apologies to Roy, and they agreed that first thing Monday morning, Roy had come back in and they'd get the contract signed off. So Roy then, you know, went off to enjoy his weekend, flew back to Cork to spend the weekend with his family, when Sir Alex Ferguson somehow managed to get through to him. And they had a phone conversation where Sir Alex basically convinced Roy to join Man United instead. And Monday morning, Roy had to call up Kenny Dalglish to let him know that I'm not going to be coming in, I'm actually going to be going to United instead. And obviously, Kenny was very, very pissed off about this. And he said to Keane, "Nobody does this to me. Nobody does this to Kenny Dalglish. You're a wee bastard and you won't get away with this." He apparently even threatened to hunt Roy down in Ayanapa, where he was heading off on a lad's holiday.
But Roy Keane was in Ayanapa.
Yeah.
It's hard to picture. He liked to drink, didn't he, in his younger
days?
Yeah,
there was that other story. I think we told it on the Roy Keane podcast of him going to the Hacienda night out. Although I don't think he got too into it then.
And he just like slowly sipped a Guinness on a bar stool.
Sort of stood at the edge of the dance floor surveying it.
Yeah.
Drank a Guinness and then
left. But he did get on the piss, because they had that fight with Schmeichel in like Hong Kong or somewhere, where they're fighting in the hotel corridor and then Bobby Charlton just comes out of his room in his pants just as Keane is headbutting Schmeichel.
Yeah.
So he obviously likes scrap. Kenny Dalglish also comes across as a bit of a, not a wanker in there. I can see why he's angry, but you know, you think of him as quite a sort of like gentle national treasure.
Yeah, I think this is again us being a little bit
young.
Bit young.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the time he was back managing Liverpool, he was quite...
Yeah, he was gentle. I was going to say frail. He wasn't frail. No. Fuck, so literally just because Blackburn's staff went to the pub on a Friday afternoon.
They missed out on signing Roy Keane. What might have been?
There's something gloriously unprofessional about that. That's like nice 90s football stuff, but also, come on.
Yeah, well, I mean, sounds like they've still got the same admin staff in there these days.
Yeah. And do you think people look back on this incident being like, oh, that's so quaint that they like didn't hit the save button? Yeah. I mean, that is a big old fuck up.
It's just incompetent.
Yeah. Right, Zach, we've had a letter from a listener. Yeah, we do love them. Please email us at contact@upshot.email if you want to write in. So last week we told you the story about John Terry, who'd been going around Chelsea's Cobham training ground, turning off all the plug switches because he didn't want any red showing because it reminded him of all their hated rivals. And Ollie has emailed in with a similar story about Tottenham chairman Dan Levy. So Ollie says, Levy is hell-bent on making sure there's absolutely no red anywhere in the stadium or the training ground. So when Spurs built their new stadium, he banned red fire extinguishers. And he was also really worried about the use of red cranes to build the ground, because apparently cranes are usually red when you rent them. And he didn't want red towering over the ground for months on end. It was his new centerpiece. So instead, he insisted on buying the cranes instead of renting them and spraying them blue with the Tottenham crest on.
Wow.
And actually, I have checked, the cranes were blue and did have crests on them. And come to think of it, cranes are usually red.
Do you think, would there have been anybody who was passing by the Tottenham Stadium and genuinely was like, this is a fucking disgrace. There's a red crane on our site.
I actually think, given how fucking childish people are in the football world, like, I mean, we talked about last week, Carlo Ancelotti having too many red baubles on his Christmas tree and getting shit from Everton fans. So I don't think it's impossible that they would have got shit for that, especially as they were towering over. But it's pretty pedantic.
And it's quite out of character for Dan Levy, because he has this reputation as being so sort of miserly. The fact that he'd splash out, I imagine a crane, I've never bought a crane, unsurprisingly, but I imagine they're pretty pricey.
Yeah, and what do you do with them afterwards?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, on the point of him being stingy, Alex Ferguson, who's been mentioned before on this pod, Alex Ferguson once said that striking a deal with Levy was more painful than my hip replacement. And they are famously painful. And there's that story about when Tottenham bought Luka Modric, and they bought him from Dinamo Zagreb. And the Zagreb director said later, after we agreed the transfer of Luka Modric to Tottenham, I politely asked Dan Levy for 5 of Luka's new jerseys. Levy gave them to me, but the invoice for the transfer, which was 23 million euros, was minus the value of the jerseys. It's like 200 quid.
On a £23 million deal.
Yeah, to be fair, he's got cranes to buy and spray, so it's expensive stuff. Actually, there's another good story about stingy football clubs. Ibrahimovic wrote in his autobiography, he said that when he did that season at Man United, they paid him £5 million, but in one of his paychecks, they deducted £1 for a bottle of fruit juice that he took out of a hotel minibar, which I just can't get my head around that.
Every little helps.
Yeah, it really does. Anyway, thanks to Ollie for sending in that Levy story. Keep them coming. Contact at upshot.email or DM us on Insta and Twitter, Upshot Towers.
I remember, sorry, to go back to your hotel bar story, I remember staying for the first time I ever stayed in a hotel on my own. I didn't quite get the concept of hotel minibar. And I just thought that the minibar was included in the price. So I just like cracked into the hotel minibar and then like sent pictures to my friends of like me like drinking the wine. They were like, yeah, you know, they're pretty expensive.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck. So then had to own up to the hotel reception.
So they let you off?
No.
Like, sorry, I've just accidentally drunk a miniature bottle of
miniature bottles of wine and 2 cans of Heineken.
A €10 water bottle, yeah. And some like biscuit husks. Yeah. They're always shit, minibars. Always so disappointing. One Dan Levy link I wanted to mention. Dan Levy isn't actually the money behind Tottenham, of course. He's the appointee of Joe Lewis, who's the guy who's bankrolled them for all these years. And Joe Lewis is an 86-year-old billionaire with the unmistakable leathery hue of a Bahamas tax exile. And he's in a bit of a pickle at the moment. Is old Joe. So he's stuck in the US where he's pleaded guilty to insider trading. He gave some stock tips to a pilot from Shrewsbury and the 29-year-old former Miss US Virgin Islands. So he told these two to lump on a load of money on these stocks because he'd heard some inside info that they were going to go up. And Unfortunately, the FBI got wise to this. And it turned out that one of the people he'd given stock tips to was an employee and the other was a romantic interest. I think you can guess which one's which. anyway, and the pilot and Mrs. US Virgin Islands piled on. And he's now facing jail, or at least a very big fine.
Wow.
And if you're wondering why he did this, so he gave the pilot the tips instead of giving him a pension plan. Which was
that's a Dan Levy move.
Yeah, it's like, just give him the pension. It's like, now I'll get these shares to pay for it. You probably don't need me to explain why he would give a stock tip to the 29-year-old Miss US Virgin Islands.
Yeah, I think we can probably fill in the gaps.
Yeah,
I just love the idea of this FBI investigation running on for years, and they're just like scratching their brains for how they can how are people getting these insider tips? And then it's suddenly like, pilot from Shrewsbury and the 29-year-old Miss US Virgin Islands. How on earth could these two be connected? And it's like,
They go on his Instagram and he's got like his hand around the waist of the beauty queen.
Beside his private jet.
Yeah, and the pilot's in the background, thumbs up with the headset on, looking like he's just made half a meal on some dodgy share tips. It was some like bioscience company or something. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see what happens to Joe Lewis, but a nice, interesting Tottenham story there. Might struggle to spray paint his next set of cranes. All right. I think that's all we got time for.
Yep. So
thanks, Zach.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening.